Okay, we're back, and we're in the Mishkan, Parshas Tetzaveh. So, the sheet you have, before I get to the sheet, I want to just do a little bit of an introduction to this sugya, so that we'll have an overall understanding of what direction we're going for the next few weeks. These five parshas, starting from last week, Truma, through Pekudei, are five parshios that primarily discuss the instructions and the construction of the Mishkan. And there's some general questions we need to ask about this, so we have an overall idea of where we're going over here. Number one, the idea of the Mishkan is we're building a sanctuary where the divine presence will rest in this world. So the first question we have to ask, we know that Hashem's presence fills the entire world. So why are we now creating a reality where we're being mitzamtzem, we're constricting Hashem's presence, so to speak, only in one place? Why? And this is looked at as an ideal situation. So how is this to be understood as an ideal situation, number one? Number two, the construction of the Mishkan is a mitzvah. The separate kelim is a mitzvah. and yet we have certain parshios, for example, like Parshas Kedoshim or Parshas Ki Tetzeh, where there's dozens and dozens and dozens of mitzvahs, and somehow we're able to manage to put them all in one parsha. Yet over here, the Torah laboriously and in great detail uses five whole parshios for this. Now, to appreciate how much is five parshios, if there's 54 parshios, it means you're approximately spending one-tenth of the entire Torah is regarding the building of the Mishkan. So obviously, that must be something very, very important. Now, unfortunately, for most people, they don't really enjoy these parshios, and they find things to be very boring at this point on. Until now, it was exciting stories and all these things that are easy to relate to. And now, only if you're in the construction business, do you really seem to be interested in this. So why is the Torah spending so much detail on how to build the Mishkan, especially since the Mishkan was only temporarily used? It was initially, in the beginning, a very short period of time until we had the Beis HaMikdash. And there was nothing to say it would take hundreds and hundreds of years, rather in a much briefer time. And the way we construct the Mishkan is not the same way we construct the Beis HaMikdash. Beis HaMikdash has different areas of construction in many ways. So we're dealing with a very short-term temporary dwelling in which all of us don't have a Mishkan. And this is, mitzvahs are supposed to be eternal, and there's never been a Mishkan since the Mishkan was finished. Even when there's a Beis HaMikdash, there's no Mishkan. So why is the Torah writing so much about this? Why so much play about this? Must be it's a very important thing. And finally, the final question the Chassam Sofer asks is, the Pasuk says that we should take Truma. I'm sorry, I don't have this source down. This was from other things I spoke about. It says we should take from every Jewish person a donation, and from that we'll build the Beis HaMikdash. So the Chassam Sofer asks a very important question. He says, how is it possible to give Hashem anything? It all belongs to Him anyway. We know that from the Gemara in Brachas, where it says, first of all, it says, L'Hashem ha'aretz u'mlo'a. And then it says, V'aretz nasan livnei Adam. And the Gemara says, well, that depends, before or after you make a bracha. But the Gemara clearly tells us everything belongs to Hashem. How is it possible to give Hashem a donation? And how does that create, a reality that Hashem comes down into this world? I mean, I can give a human being a donation, I can give a shul a donation, but how do you give Hashem a donation? It all is his to begin with. Okay, those are the general questions that are being asked over here. So the general idea of the Mishkan, and all the Sfarim talk about this, more than that, you can also ask, why Bezalel was selected to build the Mishkan, and Bezalel needed to understand the mystical combinations of all the letters that were used in concert to create the world. He used all that power in order to build the Mishkan. What did he need all that power for? So the basic answer is that just like when Hashem created the human being, he says, let's make a human being in our image. And the Tzelem Elokim. And of course, the question is, how can a human being be in the Tzelem Elokim? So the Nesiv HaShalom gives an interesting mashal to a map. When you're trying to understand the geography of a certain place, there's a piece of paper that has markings on it. And when you look at that map, you understand your way and what the territory you're going to be in. Now, no one would suggest that that map, the map of Toronto, is Toronto. But we understand that when you look at that map, you can understand everything there is about Toronto. So too, the human being is like a map of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the entire world that Hashem creates, as it's an extension of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as it were. So Hashem created the human being with those features, that the physical, that the entire realm of existence has all been implanted within the structure of the human being. And similarly, the mystics tell us that that's the same thing about the Mishkan, that the Mishkan that was created is really a miniature universe as well. And therefore, there's three parallels over this, or two maps, as it were. The map of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and his realm is found within the human being, and it's found within the Mishkan. And if you go through the Malbim's commentary, the Malbim matches up every single part of the Mishkan to every single part of the human body, which is not a discussion for today. But that is a critical component. And just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu fills the entire universe that he created, so too HaKadosh Baruch Hu fills the entire Mishkan, and Hashem also fills the entire human being with his spirituality. Now, what is the bottom line of all this? As we know, the famous pasuk that you've all known many times, that you should build for me a Mishkan, v'shachanti v'socham, and I will dwell in them. And the commentaries say, why didn't it say I will dwell in it? So the real answer to that is the Mishkan is just a model for the Jew himself. So when we're looking about building a temporary dwelling of the Mishkan, what Hashem is really doing, after he gave us the Torah, and there is a covenant between us and Hashem, and there's a purpose of creation, so Hashem is telling us in these five parshios, what is the whole Torah about? And the whole Torah is about the concept of a Jew clinging to Hashem. That's what it's all about. And that only can happen if the Jew appreciates his own construction. And we understand that by building the Mishkan as the model, as it were. And as we know how to analyze the Mishkan, we'll understand how to analyze ourselves. And really what the Torah is teaching us, although the Mishkan itself was only a temporary dwelling, the eternal message is that it's paralleling every human being who they have a very temporary dwelling on planet Earth as well. And that's why we have five parshios, so much detail, because the great complexity of the human being is no less complex than the universe itself, which is no less complex than the Mishkan itself. And for us to appreciate that complexity, the Torah writes a lot. And therefore, the better we study the Mishkan, the better we'll be able to analyze who and what we are and how the Mishkan is able to create a reality that the divine presence resides in the Mishkan. so too we can learn from that how the divine presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu can reside within each and every one of us. Certainly, the whole world is filled with Hashem, and everything is connected to Hashem, but with human beings it's a little bit different because we have free will choice, and we have ways of looking at things the wrong way, and we don't realize that reality, and therefore we need a special instructions and construction within ourselves to understand how to appreciate that which the physical world by nature knows. The trees, the wind, the rain, the oceans, they all are davuk to Hashem, but yet we have free will choice, and therefore it becomes a challenge for us to come close to Hashem. And therefore, we have to overcome the barriers that a human being creates by definition, and therefore create an environment that would match the other environments where Hashem exists everywhere and clings everywhere, and for us to appreciate that reality that we have as well. So that's a general overview to appreciate how, and that's why the Iker Torah are these five parshias. This is the Iker. And unfortunately, people just look at this as a construction and they just walk away from it. There's no coincidence that these parshas always are in the month of Adar. As we said before, the month of Adar, Mishenichnas Adar Marbim B'Simcha. What is that simcha? Well, Mesil Sherm says, the greatest simcha you could have is if you achieve the goal for which you were created for. Imagine, that's the greatest joy. You are doing that which you were created for. What are we created for? To cling to Hashem. Okay. So now, in these parshios, the month of Adar, you break it up to the letter Aleph and the word Dor, Dalad Resh. Aleph is Aleph, one, number one. The number one, Elohim, Hashem. Aleph represents Hashem. Dor means to reside. So therefore, it's the month where it's very conducive for the reality of Ador, for Hashem to Ador. Mishenichnas Ador. When the Ador, when the Almighty enters in your dwelling, Marbim B'Simcha, that gives you extra joy. And therefore, it's this month, which we have a greater opportunity to sense that reality. And that's what the Parshios, five Parshios, usually would take up the whole month. But now since we have 2 months, so we have to add a little more. But that is exactly what brings us to that Simcha. So therefore, if we better understand ourselves and how we develop ourselves, then we'll be able to invite Hashem into our lives, and we'll have that kind of simcha that will come from being close with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is the first step, okay? Any questions on that? It's clear? Yeah, I may have mentioned it in the past, but there's a lot of new people, so I just want to make sure we're all on that side. Now, there's the next point within this introduction, is the Chassam Sofer's point, and the Chassam Sofer gives an amazing answer. The amazing answer, he says, let me just read you a line from this. He says that if you look at the Pasuk, when it says that we're going to build a Mishkan and we're going to give donations, the Pasuk says, right in the beginning of Parshas Truma, it says, May Ace call Ish from each person Asher yidvenu libo, who has a philanthropic heart, tikhu es trumasi, they will take my truma. So, what does that mean exactly? And again, the question is, how is it possible to give Hashem anything? So the truth of the matter is, you cannot give Hashem anything except one thing and one thing alone. And what is that? That's what the Pasuk says. You can give him your nedivus halev, your philanthropic heart. That's the only thing you can give HaKadosh Baruch Hu. All the money you have, it's his. It's only on loan. It's all his. You just got it as a loaner. The health you have is from him. The intelligence you have is from him. The ability to do things is all from him. Whatever you do, there's nothing that you can do It's all HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's only one thing, and that is that you want to choose to be close to Hashem and have a relationship with Hashem. To give Hashem your desires. And that's the nidvas lev, the philanthropic heart. It's not a nidava, it's not the gift, it's the heart. The heart, the wanting to give. Now that is the only thing Hashem doesn't mess around with, is our free will choice, because then we wouldn't be human beings. But everything else that we have in this world, it is not ours at all. And the only thing that is ours is our choices. And if we choose to want to get close to Hashem, that is the gift that you can give to Hashem. And that is, we'll call, the material from which you build this Mishkan for Hashem to dwell in you. That is the material. When you need material to build something. So yes, there was gold and silver and all those things. That you didn't give to Hashem. Hashem owned it all to begin with. So what is it that we gave him? What is the real material that cuts through the physical world barriers and creates a reality that Hashem can bring his presence inside of us? That material is the nidvas lev. That is the philanthropic heart. And that's what the pasuk is, pashup shot in the pasuk says, Zechsam Sofer. You're going to build a mishkan from every person. What are you going to take from him? Asher yidven olibo, who gives from his heart. That's what you take. You take what he gives from his heart. Now, obviously, there's going to be some silver and gold in there. But that silver and gold will not build a mishkan. You know, the people in the Temple Institute in Jerusalem who are building all these kalim to build when the Beis Hamikdash comes, I'm not weighing in pro or con on that institute. You know, there's a lot to be said on that. You know, and they think that when Mashiach comes, he's just going to take their kalim. I'm not sure. I'm wondering how they are so sure about that. But anyway, all that, it'll only work if these people have a tremendous nedivus halev. And that's only for God to know and not for me to judge. But the nedivus halev is what creates that reality. Without the nedivus halev, you have nothing. The Chassam Sofer says, for example, he says, a person who is stingy and doesn't give with a lev sholem, so from him, he hasn't given Hashem anything. Let's say a rich person gives $1 million for a shul. All right? But he does it begrudgingly. He doesn't really want to do it, and he's pressured into it, and he's upset that he's doing it. He doesn't want to give it. So at the end of the day, in Hashem's books, he's given nothing. Because the $1 million wasn't his to begin with. The only thing you can give Hashem is your philanthropic heart. It's your desire. Oh, I really want Kvod Shemayim. And therefore, I'm willing to give this for Kvod Shemayim. So it's the willingness for Kvod Shemayim is what builds the Shekhinah that rests inside. And nothing more. Hashem doesn't need your money. Believe it or not. He needs your philanthropic heart. And this explains another interesting idea. I think we mentioned an idea like this a few weeks ago, but in a different vein. But the pasuk says, me'es kol Yisrael, kol ish, from every person. And the question is, what do you need from every person for? What do you need from every person? As we'll see in next week's parsha, we'll talk about parsha Shkolim, and the Medrash discusses how Moshe has all kinds of trouble understanding, you know, what that coin is till Hashem shows him a coin of fire. And the commentaries ask, I don't understand, what's so hard to figure out what a coin looks like? What did Moshe have trouble that he didn't understand? This is a coin you give, and this, that's it? No, and Hashem had to show him, and what's the coin of fire? So this was the whole question. Moshe said, I don't get it. You're telling us to give a machzis a shekel? We give a half a shekel, and now there's going to be korbanos, and that's going to help bring the divine presence, but Hashem, you own everything. That's what he didn't understand. So I understand, what are they giving? So Hashem shows them a coin of fire. It's the fire, it's the enthusiasm, it's the excitement, it's the love of wanting to do it. The desire that accompanies the coin, that's what brings the Kedusha in. So this becomes a whole new way of looking at any project we want to get involved in for Kvod Shamayim and trying to bring Shechina in. So if you're building a shul or any spiritual institution where you're expecting to bring the Shechina into such a place, it's not so much what you give, it's why you give. And that's why it's interesting. The rich person doesn't give more than a machzis a shekel. The poor person doesn't give a machzis a shekel. You know, and as we know, in fundraising, we know that whatever the percentage is, we know that 90% of the money comes from 10% of the people, and 10% of the money comes from 90% of the people. So we already discussed this a few weeks ago, why Hashem did that, and we gave one mahalach to answer that, and now it's the second mahalach. It's not going against the first mahalach, but we're adding now a new layer. Again, the question obviously is, Hashem, you're so kind to give the 10% of people 90% of the money. Couldn't you be a little nicer and give those 10% people 100% of the money? It would save all these fundraising campaigns and dinners and all these things where you have to nickel and dime that last 10%. You know, it's a lot easier. Just give the rich people a little bit more money and just get a few people. They give all the money and finished, and you don't have to nickel and dime it. So now, based on this, the answer is, it doesn't matter. The money isn't building it. You have to always remember, the money is not building it. What are you trying to build? A shul? A school? What are you trying to create? You're trying to create Hashem's presence. That's what you're trying to create. You're trying to create Hashem's presence. The only thing that creates it is the Nedivas HaLev. The Nedivas HaLev, has to come from everybody. Everybody is capable of Nedivas HaLev. You don't have to be a multimillionaire to have Nedivas HaLev. You could be a poor person, and for you to give $18 is a hardship. And why are you giving it? Because I want to give something to Hashem. My very much desire to have a place that's a place of Kvod Shamayim. And now, between 600,000 people's Nedivus HaLev, that's how you construct the Mishkan. And therefore, it's not how much money you have, it's how much heart you have, and the success. So you could say, I don't understand, there's a lot of shuls that are built that aren't necessarily built by a lot of people, and it's a few people, and they're beautiful and all this. You know, but you kind of wonder, you know, why historically so many beautiful shuls were destroyed in such terrible ways. What happened to such beautiful things? The answer is, many of those structures could have been built physically, but they weren't built spiritually. Just wasn't Nedivus HaLev involved in it. And that's for anything. It's for anything you want to construct besides a Beis HaMikdash, besides a Mishkan. How about your own home? Your own home can also be a Mishkan. So the question is, how much Nedivas HaLev are you putting into the home? People are so worried, can you afford to buy a home in Toronto and all this and all these things? You know, unfortunately, people, I mean, I'm not saying it's not an issue. It certainly is an issue. But the question is, that's what are you trying to buy or what are you trying to create? You're trying to create a bias Neman B'Yisrael. If you're trying to create a bias Neman B'Yisrael, it's not the money that's going to buy it. It's the Nedivas HaLev. It's how much you want Hashem in your home. That's what's going to build it. And that, you don't have to have money for that. You're going to have money. Hashem can take care of the money. That's not the problem. The real problem is, where's the Nedivas HaLev? We're worried, oh, we have to have a house. You have to buy a house. We need money, this, that. I'm not saying you don't need it. But that is not your problem. That's Hashem's problem, because he's got all the money anyway. But what is it that Hashem can't do that only you can do? Is to put Nedivas HaLev into the house. And the biggest Nedivas HaLev is probably how the husbands and wives get along with each other and with their children. What you're willing to give up for Hashem. As the Nesivah Shalom expands, so what can you give Hashem? You can give Hashem your wantings. So what does that mean you were wanting? Well, you had all this money and you really were planning on whatever. I'm just giving an oversimplified example. A wealthy person says, well, I want to take all this money and buy another home somewhere in the Caribbean. And they, but instead, you know, I really want that. I really love going there in the wintertime. But I'm going to give it away so we can have a shul. Okay, so that's another giving up something that you want for Hashem. That's a real gift. That's a real gift. So that is not limited to cash and gold and silver. It's how you interact with people, what you're prepared to give up, what is a wife prepared to give up that her husband can learn at night, as much as she likes the company of her husband. And that gives her a lot of pleasure to be with her husband. And he lets the husband go learn. And she's giving up that time to be with him so that he can learn Torah. That is as great a gift as you could give HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And vice versa. The husband going to learn when he could, or to not work so much because money's important. But he's willing to learn a few hours. That is the real gift that you can give to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that creates this reality. Now, it's very interesting. So that's really what builds things. And that's really the message in this parsha, that we have to start with a nediva slave. With a nediva slave, you're prepared to give up your wantings, and that creates that reality that HaKadosh Baruch Hu can then come into your world. And that's that famous statement of Bilvavi Mishkan Evna, that we have to build the tabernacle in our hearts. And that's how this happens. Now, the truth of the matter is, you don't have to even come on to the Chasam Sofer. This is explicitly stated in a book of the Nach that nobody knows. I'm imagining most people don't know. I'm taking liberty to say that. How many of you know are experts in Divrei Hayomim? It's not one of the most popular Sfarim out there, right? Chronicles. It's way at the back. Right? I got to watch my power. I don't have a lot of power here. So you look at the 28th chapter, almost the end of the first Divrei Yomim Aleph. It talks about the question that we can ask is, who built the Beis HaMikdash? So what's the standard answer we give? Shlomo HaMelech. All right. Yet who authored Mizmor Shir Chanukas HaMizbeach? David HaMelech. And I don't want to get technical into Gemara's discussions, but a lot of discussions, the Gemara seemed that a lot of the Kedusha of the Beis HaMikdash depended a lot about what David did. So what did David do? Well, if you look in that perek in Divrei Hayomim, which is just a beautiful perek, it just reads so beautifully, it discusses all the gifts that David collected from the Jewish people to build the Beis HaMikdash. He did the main fundraising. He did the main collections. Hashem said, I'm sorry, you're not going to be able to build it because you had to kill a lot of people to save the Jewish people, and a man with blood on his hands can't build a base of English. Fine. Yet he relentlessly fundraised to create a lot of the resources that were necessary. And then it talks about how the people rejoiced. V'yismuchu'am al hisnadvam. The people rejoiced for having offered willingly because with perfect heart they offered willingly to Hashem, and David the king rejoiced with great joy. They're rejoicing, but there's no Beis HaMikdash. They're rejoicing that they've been collecting the funds. And then we have this part that is really where we take out of the end of the Pesuk of Zimra, before the Shira, Vayevorech David, that prayer, Vayevorech David, famous prayer, that whole thing, that's right from here, from this story. And David blessed the Jewish people, and he blessed Hashem, and he said, L'cha Hashem ha-gedula v'agavura v'atiferes v'anetzchot, k'cho v'ashmar v'aretz, L'cha Hashem ha-mamlucha, Hashem, you have everything. V'oshev ha-kavod milfanecha, the riches and the honor, they're all from you. U'v'yotcha koach u'gvura, you got everything. And now, Hashem, we thank you and praise you. And now comes the critical line in Pasuk Yedaleh. V'chi mi ani, for who am I? Umi ami, and who are my people? Ki natzar koach lehisnade kazos, that we should be able thus to offer so willingly. Ki mimcha hakol, because everything is from you. Miyadcha nasanu lo, no, lo. And of your own have we given you. He's asking the Sam Sofer's kasha. Saying, who am I? Who are we? We're not giving you anything. We're like strangers before you. V'toshavim and sojourners. Like a shadow that goes through. Right? So, and he says, Hashem, all the wealth and everything. He says, Miyot, it's from your hand. Ulecha hakol, and it's all yours. So he, after Holcha, he says, so what did we do? Pasuk Yitzayim, V'yadati, but I know. That you test the hearts. And you have pleasure from their uprightness. And ani biyosher levavi hisnadafti kol eila. And I, with a willing heart, gave all these things now. And your people are here. Look at the simcha they have in giving to you. David HaMelech is saying, this is what we're giving you. The Nedivus Halev. The joy. That's the greatest way of knowing. How do you know you really want to do this? How happy are you doing it? You know, it's very rare that you find people give a lot of money and there's big smiles plastered over their faces. You know, it's rare. You have that on occasion. But usually you get lines like, you know, let's say when a person has to pay his membership. Once had a discussion with somebody in the shul, like whatever the membership was. So we said, well, you know, do you want to pay monthly or in one shot? Let's do it in one shot. Get the pain over with right away. Yeah. It's like, you know, it's like as much as we know we have to do it, but it's not necessarily, wow, that's, I'm so excited. Thank you so much that I'm able to give you all this money. So that kind of, you know, is if you really care about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and your main goal is that you want to get close to Hashem, and this is what it takes to happen, it should be your greatest pleasure. And that's what David's tefillah at the end is. He says, and give to Shlomo my son a perfect heart. The same thing. And he blessed all the people in that same way. And they had a great simcha, even though they didn't build anything. The fact that they were able to give it. So what do you see from all this? That who really built the Beis HaMikdash? Well, there's two parts of the Beis HaMikdash. There's the physical part of the Beis HaMikdash. That's what Shlomo Melech built. But the spiritual currency that enables the Shekhinah to come in, it came from David HaMelech. That's the one who really built the Beis HaMikdash. And that's what you always got to remember when we're trying to build things. Now, it's also another fascinating idea. This might, the whole class might just be the introduction, but I think it's important. The Ger Rebbe, the Imre Emes, says an interesting point on this. If you look carefully at the pasuk, again, it says, Asher Yidvenu Libo, Yidvenu, from the word Nidava. So for a minute, I'm going to digress and get a little technical, just for a minute. Don't get lost in the technicalities here. When you give a gift to the Beis HaMikdash, there's two different types of gifts. One is called a neder, and one is called a nedava. Are you familiar with the two different terms? Most of you aren't. let's say you take a cow, not a cow, you take a bull, and you say, okay, let's say you start and say, I make a neder that I will bring a bull as an offering in the Beis HaMikdash. Or you say, I make a neder that I'll give $1,000 to the shul. Okay? What happens if the bull, what happens? Now, again, let me say it clearly. He says, I make a vow that I will give a bull as a korban. He didn't specify which bull. Or a person says, I will give $1,000 to the shul. What happens if later he buys a bull, takes it to Yerushalayim, and the bull dies? Does he have to buy another bull and give the bull? So the halacha is, he has to bring another bull. Why? Because he made a vow to give a bull. Okay. Now, what if he takes a bull, and now he says for the first time, I now am giving a nidava that I'm giving this bull to the Beis Hamikdash. Or the guy takes the $1,000, says, this $1,000 I'm giving to the shul. The cash in my hand. Now you're taking that bull, you're going to Yerushalayim, and the bull dies. Do you have to replace it? The answer is no. No, you don't have to replace it. That's interesting, a neder and a nidava. There's a whole Masechta in Shas that deals with this little issue. Whole big book. And this one issue, what's considered, when you make a vow, neder means I vow that I'm going to take responsibility for something. Nidava means this is what I'm giving. Okay, you hear the halachic difference between that? Okay, that's as far as we get into the technicals.
Which one is
better? What?
Which one is better?
You know, that doesn't really matter, but we'll see one point that shows you a stark difference over here. So the question is, so why is it? Why is it when you picked this item and it doesn't come out, you don't have to replace it? That seems to be a little bit weird. What's the basis of this? So let's try to just make it a little bit human. So let's say you're a farmer. It always works better. You know, you're a farmer. You're raising your animals. So you get to know the animals. You know, we don't appreciate this, you know. I guess nowadays if you have a pet, right, those who are into pets, you know, and they got like this relationship with this pet, and like it's going like beyond now. Like now if the pet is sick, you take him to the vet, and now you think that the dog has some mental problems, so there's psychologists for the dogs. And what are you doing? You're going on vacation. You just don't stop. Take it to any kennel. It's going to be a kennel that's going to treat the doggy with respect and all these other things. And Nebuch Lo Aleinu, if the dog should die, there has to be bereavement counseling for the surviving parents and where they're going to bury the dog. And now you can bury the dog with you now if you want in the Goyish world. You know, you can bury the dog in your family, in your plot. We'll make room. We'll put the doggy in there, and you can get a couple animals in there, et cetera, et cetera. You know, they got a whole relationship with these animals. Okay, so now if you were a farmer, you know, and you're raising sheep, you know, you don't, this sheep doesn't get born and then you just sell it the next day or kill it. You know, you raise it. You know, you got to get up at 6 a.m. and feed the chickens. You know, you gotta be involved with these animals, and you've got this relationship with this little shepsula. You know, this little sheep. You've been watering it. You've been watching it. It got lost. You saved it from the wild wolves, and mamas, it got injured, and you healed it, and now you got to take this wonderful little sheep, and you're going to give it to Hashem to kill it. It's not so easy. I vow I'll give a sheep. You know, if I go to Yerushalayim and I'll go to the sheep market and I'll buy a sheep, Mirtz Hashem, I vow to give a sheep as a korban. Okay, and you happen to go there and you buy a sheep and it dies, you got to buy another one. But if you go and you're saying, I'm giving this sheep. Now, when would you do that? You wouldn't do this if you're going to the Jerusalem market. You know, that's this sheep, the one that I raised. So what have you done already with the vow? You've already given your heart. You're ready for Misnadev Halev. Now, the fact that it's my little Shepsula. I'm giving my Shepsula to get killed by a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and now on the way it dies. Oh, do you have to give another one? No, you already gave your heart. That was the most important part, is you gave your heart. That's really what Hashem wanted. Otherwise, it doesn't make any sense. On the other hand, so that, in other words, there's a difference. Are you giving, you know, am I be giving? Now, on the other hand, when you're saying I'm going to give a sheep, it means I'm taking responsibility. That's also an important thing. I'm taking responsibility. So if it dies, you still have a responsibility. That's also a nice thing. But here, I already gave my heart. And therefore, says the Ger Rebbe, he says, now you understand what's going on over here. Let's go back and read the pasuk again. The pasuk says, "Kol ish asher yidvenu libo." Yidvenu, from what root word? Nidava. Nidava is a gift where you say it's this one, as opposed to neder. It could have said, "Kol ish asher yidru libo." He made a neder from his heart. It doesn't say made a neder from his heart. It said made a nidava from his heart. Why that word? So says the Ger Rebbe, because that's the point. The point is that if you give a donation, but the real donation is what? That item, but I've already given something I really want, so what happens if at the end of that doesn't work out? You're not able to give it. You still create the Shekhinah. Because it's the wanting that creates it. And let's say you're trying to build a shul or whatever, and you're trying, and you're working, and you're giving up so much, and at the end of the day, it doesn't work. So what? You already built it. You built the Bavavi Mishkan Evne. Aye, the real Mishkan, you don't have it. No. You know, who says you can't be close to Shem without a shul? You can't have without. But it was the one thing that you wanted. That's what builds it. That's Asher Yidvenu Libo. Once you've already, even if it's only a nedava, which means even though it didn't work, and when that animal dies and you can't give it, you get full credit for the mitzvah. Because at the point where you gifted it and you gave something that you wanted to Hashem, it doesn't matter if he gets it or not because it's his anyway. It's not the end. You hear the point. It has nothing to do with whether Hashem gets it or not. Were you prepared to do it? Yes, I said it's a nedava. The little shepsa is going to Hashem, and at that point, he's giving part of what he wants to Hashem. That's it. If Hashem gets it or not, doesn't matter. So that's a very comforting idea. And the Rav Shitzer takes this idea and says, let's go back to that famous line that we say a million times. I'm going to say it deeper. V'shachanti b'socham, I will dwell in them. Don't read, it's not b'socho, not in it, but in them. So the simple pshat that dwells in them, but now it's a little more. The word toch means deep. Toch, like toch, inside. I will reside, not just inside them, but from their inside desires. The real depths of the person who really wants to get close to Hashem is those inside desires. That's where I dwell within the person. It's not just he dwells within them, but toch, deep down inside the person, where the deepest part of the person is his deepest wantings, that's where the person connects to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's where Hashem's Shekhinah is going to dwell. So therefore, even if it succeeds or does not succeed, you still get the results from that. You still get that benefit. And this is, as I said, the introduction to understand the inyanim of the Mishkan. That's what we're trying to create, that reality. Okay. Let's see if I didn't miss anything else to this introduction before we move on. Okay. So therefore, if you're looking at who are you in terms of what you can give to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the only you is your Nediva Salev. That's it. It doesn't matter how much you accomplish. It matters how much true Nediva Salev you have. Now that really is a thing to be, and that's the Ador. That should give you a lot of Simcha. You don't always have to succeed in everything, but you have to want in everything. A man wants to know Kola Torah Kula, but he doesn't have such a good mind for it. Okay, so you try. You try your hardest. That's all Hashem wants from you, is to try your hardest. That's the real Mishkan that you're trying to construct. Okay, that is the introduction. Okay, so now let's try to go through a little bit of the utensils now, as time allows. Okay, and with that introduction, any comments, questions on that? Okay, it's all pretty clear, I guess. So let's go through a very nice piece from Reb Shimshon Pinkus, Zichrona Livracha, where he gets into the Kalim. I don't know if we're going to be able to finish it, but we'll start. We'll try to get some of the main points. And he we'll look at the different kelim in the Mishkan, and you find some unusual things about it. So if you look on the sheet, so the first 5 points are just the measurements. And usually people don't like talking about measurements and this and that. But what is most phenomenal is numbers 2 and 3. The measurements of the Aron and the measurements of the Shulchan. Now, what do you find unusual about those measurements?
There's halves.
So, I mean, the question is, like, why in the world are there halves? I mean, you're talking about, you know, we're not talking about, you know, a builder who's trying to build a subdivision. He's trying to put as many houses as he can in the smallest amount of space. So when you're measuring things, you're already measuring by halves. You're talking about the Rabbeinu Shel Olam giving instructions how to build things. And Rabbeinu Shel Olam's God, and there's Ravchus, and there's abundance. Like, when do you ever use a half in a measurement? When you're doing something like small and you can't afford more, where does a measurement of a half come into building something in the Mishkan? That's a really good question. And why you have some with halves and some without halves. So what's that all about? That's a really nice question. So a simple answer, if you look in the Baal HaTurim in source number 6, the Baal HaTurim says that all the measurements, specifically of the Aron, are broken in half, to tell us that someone who wants to succeed in learning Torah has to break himself. You have to be humble. You have to break yourself. You're not so important. And then you'll have success in Torah, which is a nice answer. But that won't help us to understand the Shulchan, which also has a measurement in half, and not all the measurements are in half over there. So how are we going to understand that? So Rav Pinkus answers by laying down 2 fundamental principles that you have to agree to. If you don't agree to them, then you won't like his Dvar Torah, but they seem reasonable. He says, number one, let's look right at number 7. Wherever a half is mentioned, it's referring to a partnership and a connection. In other words, if you have half of something, what does that mean by definition? There's another half. And somebody else has got that other half. By definition. Because if you have whole, then you're the only one who has it. If you have half, that means somebody else has half. Or else you would have had whole. So he explains this in terms of the Machatzis HaShekel, which is next week's Parsha. He says, why do we give a half a shekel? Why can't you give a whole shekel? And the answer is that a person should realize that whatever you have is always half. What does it mean? It says, it's the same idea. It's, I'm not giving it because really half of it is a Kodesh Baruch Hu's. Right? I have the half that we could see. That apparently looks like it's mine, but that's only half. There's another half. It really is God's. And God gave it to me to use in the way Hashem wants me to use it. So by definition, when I'm looking at this, I know it's not all mine, and I know that it's very much connected with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's one of the beautiful messages of the Machatzis HaShekel coin. So that means, with the Machatzis HaShekel, that means I'm understanding that the money I have, in line with what the Chassam Sofer says, is that it's all God's, but I happen to be the one in charge of it, and I have to make some decisions about how to use it. That's the only half that I have. But it's like, you know, like you have a chain link where one is overlapping into the other. So it's like my half and Hashem's half. It's like we're connected here. So therefore, whenever we're talking about a half, we're talking about a connectivity to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's reasonable. Second Yesod he lays down in point number 8. He says, when we talk about length, width, and height, that represents quantity, quality, and spiritual depth. Because long means it's longer. There's more quantity. Width is wider. That's the quality. And how high it goes, high, you know, towards Hashem, it's how much spiritual depth does it have. Those are the 2 yesodos he uses. And with that, you could probably understand things. So now let's look at the utensils. Now we know that every utensil mirrors a part of our Avodas Hashem in one way or another. So as time allows, we'll try to get what we can. So let's start with the Aron. The Aron. What does the Aron represent? What does the Ark with the two tablets, the broken and the non-broken, what does it represent? Torah. It represents the learning of Torah. Straight out, the learning of Torah. So what are the half dimensions telling us? It's telling us it doesn't matter which dimension of Torah you're involved with, it's automatically, it will bring you a connection to Hashem. That's the halves. I'm learning Chumash, it will bring me to a connection to Hashem. I'm learning Gemara, it will bring me a connection to Hashem. I'm learning Halacha, I'm learning Zohar and Kabbalah, it will bring me a connection to Hashem. Even though it looks like I'm just reading a book, I mean, you know, to a goy, you know, goy, you try to explain learning Torah to goy, that doesn't go. It's like not, I remember when I was in Kollel many years ago, we lived in the Kollel apartments, there were non-Jews, so there was a nice man, a nice goy, African-American, Mr. Ramey, very fine individual, Mr. Ramey, and whatever, sometimes we needed him to, you know, you need a Shabbos goy, you know. Or sometimes you have a delivery people. And one time, you know, this African-American comes into and a Kollel house. You don't have much room to live. You got a very small kitchen. You got one living room, which is the dining room, and which is the den, and which is the study and everything. And you got one bedroom, and that's it. So in a Kollel, and this guy, like, was either delivering things to a lot of Kollel homes or whatever. And he sees, what do you have in every Kollel home? What's the most important part in that main room? You got your Sfarim Shrank. You got the bookcase. Lots of books. So one time, the black guy, he asked me, he goes, yeah, you guys all in this street, you all go to medical school? You know? You're scholars. So look at all the books that are over there. So it's like the non-Jews tfisa of our learning Torah, it's like, you know, you read a book, and it's a scholarly book. So, doesn't necessarily mean you're going to connect to Hashem. You're reading a scholarly book. So, what the Aron is saying by the halves, it doesn't matter which direction you go, it doesn't matter what part of Torah you're learning, you can create a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through whatever part of learning that you learn. That's the yesod of why it's a broken amount. That there's a half. The half means that there's a connection between me and Hashem. But it goes much further. See, now this is where all the details come into idea. So the question is, okay, we got length, we got width. So what does the length and the width mean? What are these ideas? Length, width, and height of Torah. So length and width, we could say simply is, well, general aspects of Torah. Trying to understand a pasuk in Chumash, trying to understand a Mishnah, trying to understand a halacha. What's the halacha of getting up in the morning? Fine. But then what's the height? The height, as we say, represents this depth of spirituality. Spiritual depth, that would be higher Torah, such as Chachmas HaTorah, Kabbalah. Deeper ideas, deep Musar ideas, like that. And a mistake could be that you might think that you're only going to connect Hashem if you learn this highfalutin stuff. When you learn into the Sfiros, and into the Kabbalah, and into the Musar, and into the Midos, and all that kind of thing, that's when you get the connection to Hashem. But if I just learn a chapter in Baba Metzia of business transactions, legal laws, what kind of connection to Hashem am I going to get from that? So that's why he's saying it's not just the height, it's the length and the width. Anything you learn in Torah is going to connect you to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You have to realize, anything that's authentic Torah will connect you to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's number one. That's the first yesod. That's why they all have. Any part of Torah can connect you to Hashem. And if you want to learn this, fine, you learn this. Okay, but now why is the length 2.5 and the width 1.5? which really, take out the halves, it's a 2-to-1 ratio. So why couldn't it be the same? So the idea being, because the length represents quantity, width represents quality. So your husbands or sons will appreciate this just a little better. You know, when you learn in yeshiva, there's two types of learning. You familiar with this? What are the two types of learning? Bikias and Be'ian. Learning quickly, going through a lot, covering ground, and going in depth. One is quantity, one is quality. Very interesting. You go to most Litvishi yeshivas, What when I was a bacher, I didn't know any better. I just did what I was told. You know, we're learning this Masechta in the morning. So you're learning Be'iyun. So the whole winter, you're lucky if you learned about 7 pages. That's putting in 4 hours every morning for our whole winter. You get 7 pages done. And status of greatness in a yeshiva depended on how good you were at that. And if you're really smart, you can go deep, and you mamish could come up with questions and answers and this, and great depth and analysis and this and that, and you give a chabura on this, and the big Rosh Hashivas did this and that. And then the afternoon, you covered a little bit of ground, and a lot of guys didn't like doing that, and they wanted to learn in depth the whole day, because that's where the status is. And it's fair. I don't want to comment too much on this. I don't want to say what Rosh Yeshivas truly believed or not. But anyway, but what generally happens is when a bacher's in yeshiva for many years, he doesn't really know a lot of Torah. And that's how things have evolved in North America. But what happens to the breadth? So let's look at the dimensions, and maybe Hashem is giving us some instructions. That the length is twice the width. That you got it. And it's really a Gemara. The Gemara source number 9. A person should first learn and then understand the rationale. You got to cover up a lot of ground. And when you know a lot of ground, then you can come back and then you can superanalyze to your heart's content. Because there is an idea. You have to have a breadth. You know, sometimes you're having a whole big discussion about this concept, and you know what? If you would have learned a piece of Talmud in a very far away place, it would have answered your whole question. You wouldn't have a question to begin with. The more you know, the more you can analyze something properly. If you don't know enough, this is not something that is so well advanced in the yeshiva world, unfortunately. And my son Mordechai, God bless his soul, who is a real, he's like his father. He always says, Mordechai says, see, I didn't have the advantage of being raised in a home, of a yeshiva home. I was raised in a home of Holocaust survivors. So he says, Abba, I'm what you would have been if you would have been your son. You hear? If you would have been your son, I want to be what you would have been. You know. So, because I try my best to tell him what the emes is. So, of course, he goes yeshiva, and he says, I don't understand. How come we're not learning masechtas? You know, and he had discussions with many Rosh Yeshivas that you know who these Rosh Yeshivas are in Toronto and out of Toronto. And he would have these discussions. What does Hashem really want? Does he want us to shtel on a daf for a month? Or does he want us to cover ground? Every Rosh Yeshiva, without a disagreement, all said, really, you're right, but we can't do it. The Bacham won't, you're right, but it's too boring for people. The Bacham aren't going to want to learn. They all admitted to him. So now Mordechai on his own, he went through Shas once, he's going through again, and he's a lonely man of faith, to borrow the term, and he doesn't have any real, he just has chavrusas, and he just learns. He can't fit into any, you have a kolel. Every kolel, they learn a masecht, and they sit on it. Okay, so that's the way the system is. So good luck trying to find, and all the Rosh Yeshivas acknowledge we can't do it any different. Anyway, be that as it may, over here, twice as much. Spend more time doing it. They tell a story with the Rugachever Rebbe. The Rugachever was a very brilliant person and also very curt and sharp. And, you know, you didn't mess with him. So there once was a fellow who comes to the Rugged Shover. He says, Rebbe, I have this question on a Tosfos. Tosfos is the commentary on the side of the Gemara. It's much more advanced learning. He says, I'm learning this Tosfos, and I'm stuck on it. And I can't go further. I can't go any further because I'm stuck on it. I've been stuck on this for weeks. So maybe give me some advice. So the Rugged Shover, you don't have time for these people. He says, you know what? Go to Talmud Masechta this, page this, and look at the third Tosfos on the page. You'll have your answer. Okay, the guy, oh, thanks. So he goes, he looks the Gemara, looks at the Tosfos, goes to the Tosfos. He doesn't see no answer. So he comes, he didn't see no answer. He comes back to the Rugged Shover. He says, Rebbe, I don't know. I don't see any answer. I don't know what you're talking about. He said, well, tell me what the Tosfos was dealing with. He tells him. So what happened? So the end was, it was a Tosfos that had a question. Tosfos had a question and didn't have an answer to his question. So the guy says, yeah. And then what was next? Was the next Tosfos. See? Tosfos, even though they had a question they couldn't answer, they went to the next Tosfos. So why can't you? Why can't you? So you don't know everything. So what? Continue on. You don't have to know everything. That's a very big yesod in learning in general. A lot of times, forget, okay, I know ladies, you're not learning Tosfos, you're not learning Gemara. It's still very applicable because there are certain yesodos in learning of Hashkafa, that all of us are stuck on a certain inyan. We're stuck in an inyan in Emunah. That's also part of God's Torah, right? Chovas Avavos. It's part of God's Torah. A lot of us say, well, I understand this, what Hashem has done to me, and I understand this, but this is what I'm stuck on. I'm stuck on that. I can't get beyond that one. And because of that, that colors my whole Avodas Hashem. You understand what I'm saying? You know, it's not just a Tosfos you don't understand. I don't understand why, you know, our family is so nice or this, and we can't get this happening for us. Okay, you know, I understand why Hashem, you did this to me, why you did this, I don't understand what you did for me, and I have to have a Muna, but, you know, you get stuck on that, and, you know, and comes the month of Adar, and how can I be happy when I have this situation? I'm just stuck on this. So, you know, why don't you learn a little bit of breath? You know, why don't you look at some other things? Forget about that question you have. How about the other nice things that you can understand? And let's go for some breath in our assimilating information that Hashem is processing to us, and maybe we'll have a better understanding and come back to that question later. That's what we're being told over here. Okay, fine. So this is brilliant. I mean, there's all these little nuances. There's so much to learn from here. It's gone forever. We'll have to stop when you tell me to stop. Continue next week. It's all the same stuff for 4 weeks, you know. It's not nothing. It's on this subject. But wait a minute. So that's the length and the width. What about the height? What's the height? 1.5. What's the message over there? The message is, you know, everybody loves, there's a Yetzer Hara to want to learn Kabbalah. To learn, you know, about Inyani Kedusha. You know, highfalutin stuff. And the answer is, yeah, you should have a certain amount of it, but not that much. It's not like 5.5, 7.5. It's 1.5. It's 1.5. Don't make too much out of it either. Even though it's the highfalutin stuff, it doesn't matter. You know what? If you're going to do that, if you're going to be involved in the Kabbalah and stuff, you're never going to finish the whole Torah. So that's you want to connect to Hashem. Any part will connect you to Hashem, but how about a balanced approach in connecting to Hashem? We want to cover a lot of ground. You have to have a lot of information. There are certain areas you should go in depth within that. And yes, and more higher spiritual things, we have to learn that too, but that shouldn't be the whole thing. There's somebody, they just want to learn Musar all day, and they want to learn Kabbalah all day, but they want to learn the simple bread and butter of Chumash and Rashi. Not too interesting. I don't want a class of Chumash Rashi. You know, that's the bread and butter. Why don't you know your Chumash and Rashi? No, I want to have an exciting Parsha class. Well, that's nice. But you got to know Chumash and Rashi too. That is the R. Okay. Let's move on to the Shulchan. Okay. What's... Oh, wealth. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, so what's the Shulchan all about? Well, wealth is part of it, but let's start simpler. I'm not saying that's wrong, it's right, but simple is physical eating. Let's just look at physical. What was the table? The table had 12 lechem upon him, 12 showbreads. The simplest thing is people sat down and ate. That's what the Shulchan did. It housed it for a week, and then you ate it on Shabbos, and then it was replaced with another one. So it's really, now of course you have to have some wealth to buy the bread and the flour. Okay, that comes along with it, but at the end of the day, why do you really need wealth? What do you need it for? For your comfort. What if you could have food without having to buy it? Not a problem. I don't need any money. We have a nice home without having to buy it. I don't need any money. Just see, you know, let the Democrats get into office. You won't have to do anything, right? Magically, everyone's going to have a house and everything, right? So it's about talking about eating. Well, you know what? We're talking about physical eating. Okay. The length and width, 2 and 1. 2 and 1, not a half. What's that telling us? That eating, no matter how you slice it, ain't going to get you close to Hashem. There's no halves in that. Eating does not get you close to Hashem. It's not going to happen. Only one way can it happen, with the height. The height is 1.5. The height is 1.5. If we're going to be looking for the spiritual depth within the food, then we can get it. That's different than Torah. Torah, if I'm learning Torah, by definition, if I just learn the Torah, there's going to be a connection to Hashem. But when you're eating, by definition, eating is a whole. And I don't really feel Hashem at all when I'm doing that. Length and width, you ain't going to get no HaKadosh Baruch out of that. That makes it very dangerous. So how are you going to get anything? You're going to get anything with the 1.5. If there is some spiritual depth, right, then you'll be able to get something out of this, and you won't be totally disconnected from Hashem. But the eating itself isn't going to get you anything. So you make the bracha beforehand, and you think about why you're eating. You're putting a little spiritual depth. You're elevating, trying to connect it. Okay, then that's going to happen. But otherwise, it's not any way you eat, you're going to be connected to Hashem. Torah, no matter what you learn, you'll be connected to Hashem. As long as you don't have anti-feelings. Notice you don't want to be a kofer. But any, you just learn Torah, it's going to connect you to Hashem. It's not a problem. Eating, whichever way you slice it, it ain't going to connect you to Hashem. Except if there's some height, some spiritual depth, then you'll find a connection to Hashem. If you're mindful of that, maybe many people aren't mindful of that anymore. In the olden days, when you know, Imamus was a sacrifice to have kosher. Nowadays, it's not really a sacrifice. It really isn't. You know, I don't think when you go to the store and you pay the bill, you're saying, oh, "I'm paying so much money because I love Hashem." And there's not. I don't know if we're mindful. It could be. But more to the point is, before you eat it and think about the right machshavas, that I'm eating this to bring part of Hashem's reality into this world, and I'm trying to elevate the sparks of the food, and that is a tikkun for the food, and all the things we've talked about, that's the kind of things that connect you to Hashem. It could be the buying kosher, but it's so automatic, it's usually not going to happen. But let's look at the measurements as well. I don't really see the difference. You can have there. Yeah. The biggest proof is Pesach hotels. I don't have to say more than that. I'm not casting aspersions on all Pesach hotels, only on 95% of them. You know, as having been there as a rabbi there, it's about the least spiritual place you can be, but you got the most, every hechsher in the world you could want. But it's the least spiritual place to be for Pesach, generally speaking. Generally, there are exceptions. Okay, you know, because they're eating 6 times a day. you know, like there isn't a time when they're not eating. You know, only from that did you get the 24-hour tea room. Okay, so that doesn't mean anything. Anyway, so but still, what's the length and width? The length is 2, the width is 1. So what's it trying to tell us with there? So what did we, let's go back to the rule. What's length and width? Quantity versus quality. What are we being told? When it comes to food, should be more focused on the quantity than the quality. What does that mean? Well, number one, there's got to be a certain quantity that you eat. There's got to be a quantity. It's not you go on these crazy diets. No, you have to have a nourishing breakfast, you know, a nourishing lunch, a nourishing supper, maybe a couple nourishing snacks, and there's got to be like 2,000 calories, whatever. That's a quantity. Ah, but what often happens, you notice your teenage children, when I was a teenager, what drove my mother, all of a shalom, nuts, you know, especially on a Sunday, right? On a Sunday. What usually, what does the fridge look like on a Sunday? Well, almost most Jewish fridges are full on Sunday. Full with what?
Leftovers.
Leftovers and all kinds of other things. It's very rare in a Jewish home in Toronto that you have a, you know, the cupboards are bare. I mean, you got everything. I mean, I look at my fridge, just me and my wife, and the fridge is packed, right? So now what happens? You open the fridge and you scan the fridge. Now you see milk, eggs, bread, butter, fruits, vegetables, leftover chicken, this and that. And what does your teenager do after looking at it for about 3 minutes? What does he say?
There's nothing to eat.
Right? So you know what? I'm going to the restaurant and I'll take out to Sobeys. I'm bringing home some fresh chicken. Now what is going on over here? What's going on over here? We're mixing up the dimensions. You have to have a quantity of food. You have to have a good quantity of food for nutrition. But who needs such great quality? The quality can be half. You know what? Leftovers may not be as geschmack as fresh. I know a fresh roast out of the oven, a fresh challah mamish. It's amazing. No, I don't know. I was raised that I eat Shabbos leftovers till Thursday. Till Thursday. And that's how my wife cooked. She cooked knowing that she didn't have time to cook it anyway. She cooked it all for Shabbos. And so, but it's not geschmack. The answer is that you got to be careful. You know, there is a concession. You have to eat. We're not going to deny that. And you got to know that that is not necessarily going to connect you to Hashem. But the first thing, be really careful. Even if you're not going to Hashem, focus more on the quantity and not on the quality, because that's going to get you in real trouble. Eat enough to eat. So my mother, and I said, there's nothing to eat in the house. And my mother, Holocaust survivor, she says, Breit und Bitter, bread and butter. There's lots of bread and butter in the house. Oh, yeah. And I remember I was so upset. It's hard as a child to understand the makeup of the Holocaust survivor. I wish I had the intellect of 60 when I was 6, but I didn't. So one day I'm going to get my mother so upset. It's nothing to eat. You know, remember those days you had boiled chicken Friday night? Disgusting. I can't stand boiled chicken till today. I have nightmares from it. And I hated boiled chicken. Everything was boiled chicken. And I forced my parents to buy ketchup or I would have died. So one day I was so upset. And I said, Mom, how come you can't make anything good? So I made a ketchup and mustard sandwich. It's like my protest. Like, you can't make anything good in the house, so I'm going to eat ketchup. She was going nuts. But, you know, that was because I can't eat anything. Anyway, so that's the way it should be. However, so that's the length and the width. Okay, so now what about the height? Height's 1.5. 1.5. Well, it's not even equal to the 2. It's even not equal to the 2. So what's the Torah telling us? It says, don't fool yourself. That 1.5 is telling you, you want to do it L'Shem Shemayim? He says, don't realistically expect your L'Shem Shemayim to be more than your love for Gashmias. You'll be lucky before you sit down, maybe for a minute. Okay, we're eating L'Shem Shemayim. But will you make half kavon and the brocha shahak? Call me before everything goes to the world. Fine. Now you start eating. Once you're getting in a, what do you call it, in your game, in your groove, You know, you already got into the seventh forkful. Remember we discussed a couple of weeks ago, try to just not take the next fork till you finish chewing, you know. And you try that for the first one. But by the fourth, your mom's in, you know, in over everything. And then, you know, and then maybe in the middle, oh, yeah, let's say a little Dvar Torah to sanctify the meal. You know, and, oh, yeah, let's do some Maimar. You know, just, you know, try to get to sanctify it. But realize it isn't really going to get that much. As a regular human being, it's going to be a struggle. That's the message of the Shulchan. Okay, well, I think we'll stop it here, okay? And then if you want, we can continue next week to do more of these, or we could do something else. I'll have Wendy let me know. You'll take a little poll if you want to continue. There's still more to do. We have to do the menorah. The menorah that has no measurements. Why does it have no measurements? We have to stand the two mizbechos that don't have any halves at all. And there's a lot of other questions. So we'll leave it at that. I hope this was interesting. And Mr. Shemuel can continue this next week.